The Liberals Gun Corner, a proud progeny of the Gun Rights Radio Network, hosted by Cowboy T, San Francisco liberal with a gun. This podcast is always available at www.liberalsguncorner.com, and you can email us at cowboyt@liberalsguncorner.com. Cowboy T here. Welcome to episode 41. Happy February 1st. Last several episodes have been fairly long and spaced kind of far apart. I realize that. We're going to see what we can do to make the episode shorter, but have them come around more often. See, we always have a lot to talk about, so it should be pretty easy to make that happen. Well, let's get right into it then. Without further ado, your liberal here has been down to Richmond, Virginia, our state capital, a couple of times this last month. I'm talking about January now. January 2015. First time was what we call Lobby Day here. It happens on January 19th, also coincides with Martin Luther King Jr. Day. This is a day when the legislators make themselves, generally speaking, available to be lobbied by their constituents. And so we of the Virginia Citizens Defense League, that's the VCDL, along with all sorts of other groups, go down there and we meet with our elected officials. That means the House of Delegates and the State Senate. And that's what we did. I met with my state senator. Unfortunately, because I was running kind of late, I did not get a chance to meet with my House delegate. And that really kind of regretted that because I wanted to meet with him. Fortunately, I got another chance later on. My state senator asked me, "Hey, Cowboy T, what's your top 2A issue?" So I told him, school and college campus carry for those with concealed carry permits. Let's face it, folks. The bad guys are not going to be holding permits. We know what happened both at Sandy Hook Elementary School, the killing of those 20 innocent little kids and the six, brave staff members that tried in vain to save them but got killed anyway. We know what happened at Virginia Tech. 32 innocent people killed. Both times there were gun-free zones. So I would really like to see the good guys legally allowed to carry at these places. Stop making them gun-free zones. Make it so that there's at least a chance of stopping a mass murderer like Sung Hui Cho or Adam Lanza. And I express this to my state senator. And hopefully we'll be able to make that happen in future years, in future legislative sessions. Well, after I met with my state senator, there was just enough time to make the VCDL rally. And this is really why I ran out of time to visit with my House delegate. Again, fortunately, I was able to meet up with him later on. Well, we always have this big rally. It's something like anywhere between 500 and 1,000 people that usually show up for this. That's always a good thing. This time we had a couple of pro 2A speakers. David Kodria, who is a well-known columnist that is pro-Second Amendment, and Emily Miller of Emily Gets Her Gun. She's also now a Fox News TV correspondent. They were the two major speakers there. I expected liberal bashing, quite frankly. So I had expressed my concerns to the president of the VCDL, Philip Van Cleve. Is this going to be an issue here? And he said, well, maybe I can talk with him about it. And you know what? I was pleasantly surprised. David Kodria referred to progressives instead of liberals as far as the antis go, and I actually tend to agree with that. I'm a liberal. I'm very pro-gun precisely because I'm a liberal. I meet a whole lot of pro-gun liberals out there. Begemot over at the Liberal Gun Club is just one of them. Swiss Dog is another one. He likes Swiss rifles. Well, Emily also refrained from liberal bashing, and again, I was particularly surprised by that because she, as a former Republican Party staffer and a well-known conservative Republican Christian, she is known to bash liberals. And I've mentioned this to her, saying, wait, well, why are you calling me your enemy, Emily? I'm your comrade in arms, quite literally. Well, she refrained from that as well, and I was really appreciative of that. She referred to something very important. and during her presentation, she spoke to the difference between being pro-gun and pro-Second Amendment. She actually said, I don't view myself as pro-gun. I do view myself as pro-Second Amendment. And there is a difference, folks. I know the two are conflated. Why? Because of the state of the art of technology right now. I happen to agree with her. I'm not really so much pro-gun either. I, too, am pro-Second Amendment. Today, the state of the art is chemically propelled projectiles that strike things or living beings in your defense. What about future weapons, though? Technology is advancing at such a rapid rate, we may end up with hand lasers. Star Trek may not be that far-fetched. After all, we had flip phones in the 90s, you know, the Kirk and Spock communicator-style flip phones. Well, we're beyond that now. Now we're walking around with those pads like they have in Star Trek Deep Space Nine. We have those now. So what about small arms? Are they going to be lasers? Might we come up with the physics in 100 years to make, I don't know, phasers? Whatever the heck it is. If the police have it, and if the army have it, we need it too. And that's why I think Emily is correct to refer to being pro-Second Amendment. Being pro-gun is simply a consequence of that, because that is the current state of the art of technology. Another thing I was rather pleased about was there were about 600 adults there. We made a pretty good showing, as we always do. Unfortunately, there was this reporter. She's clearly an auntie. She's working for WVTF Public Radio. Her name is Sandy Hausman. She was informed of the correct number. We told her, hey, there are about 600 people here, because, of course, we count this up every year. But she said, well, I'm going with 200. Yeah, there were 600, but she's deciding unilaterally to go with 200. Folks, that is a deliberate underreporting. And that is what we call lying, folks. Excuse me, I thought public radio was supposed to be about honest reporting, not lying. I've been listening to public radio for years. I'd always taken them as pretty honest folks. Well, obviously that's not happening with Sandy Hausman here. One thing that I also noticed, the aunties actually made a good showing at their rally, which followed ours. WVTF Public Radio said that they had about 300 people. So it looks like they deliberately wanted to make it look like the aunties have more than we did. It's wrong, but again, that's biased reporting. Can't have that. Nonetheless, they had about 300 people, the aunties did, and I believe that number. How'd they have so many this time? In previous years, they had maybe 10 or 20 people. How'd they get 300 all of a sudden? Well, that's thanks to Sugar Daddy Michael Bloomberg. Turns out that the moms demanding illegal mayors, they call themselves moms demanding action, but they clearly demand illegal mayors as well, are bussing people in from all around Virginia. They're bussing in all sorts of these college kids, funded, of course, by Mr. Bloomberg's billions. So they're about to do their rally as we're about to leave. Turns out there was a suspicious package, quote-unquote suspicious package, that the police found, Virginia State Capitol Police found. So they couldn't do their rally where they had initially intended, which is where we had ours. Now, I don't like that they weren't allowed to do their rally there, but it turns out that they were given a better spot. Yeah, right up by the courthouse. We wanted to use the courthouse, and they told us no, but they told the aunties yes. What's going on there, huh? So, yeah, they ended up with the lieutenant governor, our current lieutenant governor, standing with them at their rally. He spoke there as well. Turns out he's Bloomberg funded, too, his whole campaign, along with now current governor Terry McAuliffe, was all funded by Michael Bloomberg. By contrast, VCDL does not have a billionaire sugar daddy, folks. We do all this that we do on our own dime. Now, we had buses, too. Yeah, we had four of them. But guess what? We actually had to pay for it. We members who wanted to ride those buses, we actually had to pay for it. And a whole lot of others who didn't ride the buses, and by the way, the buses were full, they drove down with their own cars and their own gas money. So I gotta ask, where were all these antis, these 300 antis, in years past? This was the first year I'd ever seen anything close to 300 antis. Before, it was, like I said, 10, 20 people, maybe. I think on a really good year, they might have had 25. Well, there's a big difference. Here it is. The antis are now getting paid to do it by New York multi-billionaire Michael Bloomberg with his Moms Demanding Illegal Mayors organization. It's easy to get people to do stuff when you throw money at them, folks. When it's free? Sure, yeah, I'll do that. You know, rounding up college kids from all the way across Virginia and busting them in to inflate the numbers. Well, we've had our numbers between 500 and 1,000 virtually every year that we've gone to Lobby Day. Virtually every year, folks. Certainly every year that I've gone. And we do what we do, and we're getting the job done, which is preserving freedom, the old-fashioned way. Not by some sugar daddy billionaire, but rather with our own resources, our own money, our own time, our own cars, etc. And that should tell you something, too. It's not an absolute indicator, true, but I'd say it's a pretty good indicator of who's really serious about this. And it may even be somewhat of an indicator of who's got the better moral position. We'll be back after a short break. See you in a moment. Welcome back. Well, you just got through hearing about Lobby Day, January 19th, just a couple weeks ago. Actually, less than a couple weeks ago. Of course, that's not all that's happened over the last month. I told you I've been down to Richmond a couple times already this year. You just heard about the first one. Here's the other one. Now, I got to tell you, this was fun. Turns out, January 29th, just 3 days ago, there was a hearing in the House of Delegates. This is the House Militia, Police, and Public Safety Subcommittee number one. Does that mean that there is a House Militia, Police, and Public Safety Subcommittee number two? Number three, maybe? Or four? Gosh, how many of these subcommittees are there, I wonder? But, well, that's politics for you. Gotta have that bureaucracy, right? But anyways, this Subcommittee number one, House Militia, Police, and Public Safety Subcommittee number one, was having a hearing. There was a laundry list of anti-freedom, also known as anti-Second Amendment, bills up for review. There to be considered by this subcommittee. The antis, it turns out, were there in force too. Apparently they got wind of this. Oh gosh, there were so many of the moms demanding illegal mayors. Moms Demanding Action, they call themselves. Even the Virginia State Police, and get this, the feds were there. That's right. Someone from the Department of Injustice, run by Eric Fast and Furious Holder, was there. Now, that representative from the feds, I don't have anything against him. He was just doing his job. Well, the Moms Demanding Illegal Mayors, on the other hand, now they were interesting. They brought, all sorts of white women and several of their white daughters. This is, of course, an obvious ploy to try to tug at heartstrings, you know, bring in 9-year-old little kids, but I gotta ask, you know, what's up? You know, are brown kids not good enough to tug at heartstrings for you moms, huh? I didn't even say hardly any white boys there. Apparently only white girls are good enough for the aunties, huh? But, oh, well, I better not get into that too much. But they're trying to tug at the heartstrings, so they brought their cute little white girls. Wait, that's not true. Wait, there was indeed a speck of pepper in that sea of salt. There was one black woman that I saw. Go figure. Well, VCDL was also there in force, fortunately. There was a little more pepper than there was with us than there was with the Antis, which should tell you something too. For example, I was there. There were a lot of bad bills up for consideration, and these were basically just feel-good, do-nothing-in-reality bills. This is the kind of stuff that you do when you want to campaign for the next office, okay? I think this is about getting the 2016 Democratic Progressive base going. Here's an example of one of them. There was a bill that, this is at a state level, that would say, okay, we're taking your gun rights away for misdemeanors for domestic violence. Well, we don't want domestic violators to have guns now, do we? Say the antis. Here's the problem. Federal law already covers that. It's already the law right now by federal law. It's even on the form 4473, folks. This is unnecessary duplication. We don't need to duplicate at the state level what's already at the federal level. It's already illegal. How much more illegal do you want it to be? Jeez. Like I said, do nothing, feel good, watch me campaign politically sort of thing. It's already illegal. Here's another one. There was this bill that the antis wanted to be considered. Here's what this thing would do. If you're behind or delinquent on your child support payments, you get your permit, your concealed carry permit, pulled from you. The antis' so-called reasoning: well, if you're not smart enough, if you're not responsible enough to take care of your kids, how could you be considered responsible enough to have a gun? But see, they tipped their hand. Lori Haas, the self-styled spokeswoman for the Virginia Tech parents. Now, I don't know how she somehow became the spokeswoman for all of them, because Virginia Tech mom Holly Adams obviously does not agree with her, but oh well, that's neither here nor there. Lori Haas decided to say something in support of this crazy bill. There's no connection between child support and guns, but she wanted to make the connection anyway. But she goofed. She tipped their true hand. She made a comment about deadbeat dads. And then she quickly changed it to deadbeat parents. Well, don't you think that didn't go unnoticed by the San Francisco liberal with a gun here? See, the committee allowed people to speak for or against this bill. And Mrs. Haas is one that spoke for this crazy bill. Naturally, I spoke against it. My response, in part, was as follows. I heard somebody say something about deadbeat dads and then change it very quickly to deadbeat parents. Excuse me, that's an attack on men. You know, this is not supposed to be a gender-based attack here. And I heard Lori Haas go, humph. It turns out I was standing fairly close to her. In other words, I called her out. So not only is this another just, you know, feel-good bill that would do nothing but penalize people that may fall on financial hard times, it was an attack against men. Give you an example. My dad, when I was a kid, had lost his job. Back in the 70s, folks, this was certainly true back then, black people, black men certainly, were last ones hired, first ones fired. You ask anybody black, they'll tell you that. My dad ended up, unfortunately, losing his job for a situation that he could not control. Like I said, last one's hired, first one's fired. He had some difficulty securing employment for a short period of time. So yeah, he fell behind on his child support. Well, duh, he didn't have a job. He had no means of income. Of course he couldn't. Of course he couldn't pay that at that time. Fortunately, my dad being my dad, he's a tenacious fella. He's a really a tenacious man. And he did. And months later, secure gainful employment. And from then on, he went up and continued to rise up, and he took care of that child support issue. Well, thank God that such a law did not exist in California at that time. I don't know if it does now. And I remind you, he's one of the very few, like a handful of black men in the entire state to actually have a concealed carry permit in California. That was a neat trick in and of itself. We talked about that in episode 10. Well, if this kind of law had been there in California at that time, he would have been defenseless. His permit would have been pulled, and law-abider that he is, he would not have carried. Well, guess what? He was attacked physically during that period of time by racists who didn't like the success of a black man, even the existence of a black man. Fortunately, he had his gun, and he is alive to this day because of it. Fortunately, he didn't have to fire it. So, such a law could have gotten my father killed, and I told the committee this. Fortunately, that bill got killed too. You know, none of the gun restriction bills, this laundry list that they had, and it was a laundry list, none of them would have stopped either the Sandy Hook or the Virginia Tech shootings. And this is the justification that the antis are using. Okay? Well, we don't want another Virginia Tech. We don't want another Sandy Hook. Well, good, neither do I. Stop with the gun-free zones, folks. These bills that these antis are proposing would not have stopped either one. And thank goodness, all the bad gun bills were killed. I noticed something else. I've been noticing this for a long time. And I saw it here, you know, again, 3 days ago. When I listen to the antis talk, I feel like I'm listening to a religious revival. Seriously, I'm feeling like I'm listening to somebody who's been, pardon me, brainwashed by a televangelist. Their fervor for taking our guns from us, and that's really what they want to do. Handgun Control Incorporated made that clear in the 70s. Yes, they want to do that. They want to make all handguns, except for police and military, totally illegal. They said it. Their desire to gut the Second Amendment seems nearly religious in its intensity and fervor. They got all sorts of fallacies that they throw at you with emotion behind them. And when we call them on those fallacies, certainly when I've called them on those fallacies, they tend to react very angrily. Now, we're calm and cool. We're just pointing stuff out. They react the same way that Dianne Feinstein did to Ted Cruz when Ted Cruz called Dianne Feinstein out on her fallacies with regard to her gun restrictionist proposed legislation. Well, they tend to react angrily, the antis do, almost to a violent level. You know, yelling and screaming, name calling, even saying you're against women. I had one call me a racist. Yeah, me a racist. Well, she found out about my so-called racial background and, foot and mouth disease for her. She got real quiet. All of a sudden, then she decided to change the subject. I love doing that to them. And they're the ones doing it to themselves, really. Matter of fact, their anger actually has risen to violent, literally violent levels before. Tell you about one case a couple years ago. There was an actual assault on a VCDL member at a fair. Turns out we had a booth there and we were making our presentation, passing out Gun Save Lives orange stickers. Well, this auntie tried getting violent, physically violent, with one of our members. She failed. Her strength cannot compare to his. Well, fortunately, this happened in full view of the police. Uh-huh. They asked him, "Sir, would you like to press charges against her?" Fortunately for this auntie, this violent jerk, the VCDL member took the high road and chose not to press charges, and that's the only reason she's not in jail right now. So this is what happens when you challenge the antis on their stuff. You got to be careful with that, and you have to be ready for that. Now, here's the scary part. With Michael Bloomberg's money, now that he's funding them like crazy, you know, the Moms Demanding Action or Illegal Mayors, his so-called Everytown organization, the antis are actually starting to get some crowds now. Well, this is their right. First Amendment, after all. Guess what? Opposing them is also our right. Same First Amendment. I wish the antis would respect that as much as they respect their own First Amendment rights. And that's what I'm doing here. This is what I do here on the Liberals Gun Corner. That's what I do when I go to Richmond as well. But again, I got to ask, where were all these aunties before Mr. Bloomberg decided to butt his nose into Virginia's business? Where were they? Where were they all those years? We were there. Where were they? And why the dishonest reporting by the public radio station reporter, Sandy Houseman? What's going on there? You know, is she showing some kind of bias here? Personally, I'd suggest that, yeah, she is. And that kind of bias has no place in news reporting. Now, if you want to do some kind of, I don't know, news commentary or an editorial, yeah, sure, okay. That's what editorials are for, but not in news reporting. And C-SPAN's Brian Lamb would agree on that. And that's a big part of why we do what we do here at the Liberals Gun Corner. When we come back, well, seems I can't get my hands off the lever guns recently. I ran across another Rossi Model 92. You remember me talking about the 357 version before? Well, I'll tell you about this 44 Magnum version when we return. Stick around. Okay, partners, we're back. Yeehaw! Well, you've heard me talk about the Rossi Model 92 before. In a previous episode, it was the 357 Magnum version. Well, generally speaking, the Rossi 92 series is a pretty darn faithful reproduction of the Winchester Model 92 design from way back when, the 19th century. The major difference now is, well, A, they have stainless steel versions, and B, there's this safety that's been added. No, it's not the cross-bolt safety that you see with the Marlins, but it's rather a fairly unobtrusive thing that goes on the top. I barely even notice it. Now, there were some reported issues with quality control in earlier years with the Rossi lever guns, but so some years back, Taurus, well, actually, the parent company is called BrazTech, for Brazilian Tech. They bought Rossi a few years ago, and they fixed that quality control problem very nicely over the last 4 or 5 years. Now, so you buy one of those guns, they're pretty good. Now, remember, I've spoken about the 357 Magnum version. I talked about how much fun it was. I talked about how much fun it was to shoot it, the features on it, the barrel length. You've heard me talk about reloading for it. Well, now I got this 44 Magnum version, and it's in my hands, folks. Oh, yeah. Got to tell you, looks just like the 357 version. Same barrel length, 16 inches, same shape, same everything. It looks like it's identical twin. It's just got a bigger bore. This particular one, I got to say, it's got a pretty slick action. I ended up getting it off the used gun rack. Its previous owner apparently must have somehow slicked it up a little bit, maybe just through use, or just maybe a trigger job or some kind of action job was done on it. Either way, it's slicker than my 357, which was bought brand new. You've heard me talk about the Ruger 96/44 lever gun, also in 44 Magnum. So the obvious question, how do the two compare? Well, this Rossi 92 and 44 Magnum is pretty slick. Again, it's a little bit slicker than my 357 version. But I got to say, nothing can compare to the smoothness and slickness of the Ruger 96-44 action. It is just that nice. And that's because it's a totally different design. It's basically the Savage 99 modernized. Of course, a more modern design is going to be a little bit better. The Ruger has an 18-inch barrel length. This particular Rossi has a 16-inch barrel length. So that's 2 inches lost. But then again, Rossi's can come with 20-inch and even 24-inch barrels, so you can get a longer one if you want. The Ruger came in only one barrel length. The magazine types are different. Anyone who's ever used a Ruger 10/22 will be quite at home and very familiar with the 96 series magazine. It's basically a bigger bore 10/22 magazine, the rotary style. The Rossi, like all Winchester lever guns pretty much, has a, well, I'm going to go California and say totally tubular magazine, man. Like, whoa. Sorry about that. But, you know, it was there, dude. Here's another difference. And this has directly to do with the design era of the two rifles. Rossi's 92 is a faithful copy of Winchester's Model 92. Ruger's is a more recent design. Therefore, the Rossi is eligible for single action society, shooting society competitions. Anything, what is it, before, 1898 and previous? Basically, legally an antique. Well, this 44 Magnum from Rossi is so eligible. The Ruger 96/44 is not, unfortunately. And personally, I think that's crazy. Rugers should be allowed in single action shooting society. It's a lever gun for well, Whiskey Pete's sake. Okay? A lever gun. Jeez. But, you know, them's the rules if you're doing, you know, SASS sanctioned cowboy action shooting. So that means you got to think about that if you're wanting to compete in there. So now, let's compare the Rossi 92 in 44 Magnum to the aforementioned Rossi 92 in 357 Magnum. Well, the 44 Magnum version shoots 44 Special just fine, I assure you. You know how the 357 Magnum shoots 38 Special with no problem? Same with the 44 Magnum shooting 44 Special. Same round capacity. Why? Because 44 Special rounds are just as long as 38 Specials. 44 Magnums are just as long as 357 Magnums. Same round lengths, okay? Here's a difference, though. More kick. Well, duh, this is a 44. It's going to be more powerful than the 357. The 44 Special round, of course, is going to have more kick than the 38 Special. Duh, bigger bullet, more powder in the case. But actually, it's not that bad. 44 Special is still pretty easy to shoot. I think a little kid could shoot 44 Special with no problem out of this rifle. But speaking of the ammo, there is one small issue, another small issue here, and that is the cost of said ammo. If you even think about trying to feed a 44 Magnum rifle with factory ammo, you're going to go broke pretty quickly unless you're as rich as, well, the aforementioned Michael Bloomberg or most politicians. You go to Walmart and you buy 38 Special. You're going to pay, what is it, $18-$20 for a box of 50. You try buying a box of 44 Special by contrast, you're paying almost, you know, $50. It's going to be at least 40. Let's compare the price of 357 versus 44 Magnum, okay? Cost 357 Magnum at Walmart, $26. I just checked not too long ago. 44 Magnum, well, they're out of stock. But at our store, you're looking at $40 plus. So the factory ammo is going to be a lot more expensive. What does that mean? You better start considering reloading if you're not already. Unless you want to be eating Top Ramen for firing this gun. Fortunately, both the 44 Special and the 44 Magnum rounds are very easy to reload. I know, I do them all the time. They're about the second easiest rounds in the world to reload, right behind 38 Special. It's like any other rimmed revolver round. Actually, it's not that different from reloading a rimless round, like, say, 45 ACP or 9mm. So you better consider reloading if you want to shoot this thing a lot, and I do. One nice thing, since these are older designs, lever actions, cast bullets work very well with these rounds. So those of you who are thinking about casting, you're in luck. You're going to love this gun. I would suggest that you cast your bullets big, okay? Don't size them down too much. I've discovered that the 44 Magnum version of the Rossi 92 has slightly generous chambers, much like the 357 version does. So you'll do better with slightly fatter bullets. So, what is the verdict of Cowboy T, San Francisco liberal, with a gun on this Rossi 92 in 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world? Excuse me, round in the world. Sorry, Clint. Well, the Rossi 92 series is generally a good series. This gun has all the goodness of the 357 Magnum version with even more power. Just like with 357 Magnum, 44 Magnum out of rifle length barrels is capable of putting large hogs down. Now, this is not unique to this particular line of rifle. The Ruger 9644 and the Winchesters, the Marlins, the Ubertis, and so on, they'll give you the same performance. So that's generally true of 44 Magnum rifles. That includes, by the way, Ruger's new 77/44 bolt gun. Hey, you know, why don't we do a little quick comparison there? Okay, this is going to be short. I fire both. Both styles of gun are great. The bolt version, the 77/44, is fun. So is the lever gun. I like them both. It's totally personal preference, folks. There is no need for a holy war if you want to play that game. If you like bolt guns, get a bolt gun. If you like lever guns, get a lever gun. If you like both like I do, see if you can afford both. Unfortunately, I can't. I got a pretty good deal on this, Rossi. This is Cowboy T, signing off. Until next time. Till then, safe shooting. Practice often. Enjoy your February. And thanks for listening.